Good afternoon, everybody. The time is not 2 o'clock. That was the last page we read. That was at 2 o'clock. Now it's 2:08 and 42 seconds, and we're welcoming you to a wonderful discussion with Dr. Fred Fletcher, an orthopedist specializing in total joint replacement at Ortho New York. A lifelong resident of the Capital District, Dr. Fletcher graduated from Albany Medical College in 1986. He completed a residency in orthopedic surgery at Albany Medical Center. He's also chairman of orthopedics and medical director of the Total Joint Center of Excellence at Albany Memorial Hospital. You can call us, as people already are, at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post at our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Fletcher is here. Everywhere I go, somebody is telling me about having a knee problem. Is it just my imagination, or are we having more knee problems than we ever had before?
I think we are having a lot more knee problems. These days, people are more and more athletic. I think the baby boomer generation has come to age, and we're just seeing a lot of people worn out their hips and knees, and it's become a very common procedure.
How dangerous is it? And how often do they work and not work? Is there a rule of thumb? I've heard of backs. It could be as much as 50-50. What do you get on knees?
Well, I think our odds are a lot better than 50-50. The satisfaction with a knee replacement probably is about 92% good or excellent results, even at 20 years after surgery.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. So you do one knee at a time. If both knees are hurt, you would not do them at the same time, right?
It's a lot easier on the patient to do one at a time, but you can, in certain cases, do bilateral total knee replacements.
And you do knees and hips?
Yes, sir.
And what? And tell us about hips, because we've been reading about hips lately, and some of the hip replacements. And you see the lawyers in the middle of the night,
right,
saying, "Call us if you've had a bad hip replacement."
Right. They always know when to put the ads on TV when the people who've had hips are watching television. And what that was all about was one model hip that was made by one company turned out to probably be a bad design. It was a metal-on-metal hip, and there were several other metal-on-metal hips that did quite well. But once that hip started having troubles, most metal-on-metal hips are off the market now. So
I'm sorry, when you say metal-on-metal, Doc, what do you mean?
I'm sorry, let me clarify that. In a hip replacement, there's a ball and there's a socket.
Yep.
Now, the ball can be either metal rubbing up against a metal socket. It could
right.
be metal on a plastic socket, which is really the traditional time-proven bearing surface, and ceramic, either ceramic head on plastic or ceramic on ceramic.
Right, right. And I'm just free associating here, but it seems to me I remember a time when some drug reps went to jail because they were doing the actual operations and the doc was standing there looking at that. That doesn't happen around here.
No, not at all. We do rely on reps to make sure we have all the proper instruments before we go to surgery. They have very specialized equipment, and as well as all the implants, including all the different sizes that we would need for a surgery long before the operation.
And how long does it take to recover?
I tell most of my patients you're about 75% of the way recovered at about 6 weeks.
6 weeks. That sounds right. And what has to happen to recover? There has to be, what, knitting of the bone or something? Or?
Well, for a total knee, we usually, in most cases, cement those in. And they're as solid as they're ever going to be after 15 minutes. They're
wow.
quite solid. You still need to heal.
As long as you get it right after those first 15 minutes.
That's right. It does take some time, though, to get over. And I say we have the easy job putting it in. The hard job is getting over surgery. People swell.
Sure.
They're stiff.
Sure.
So it's a lot of work getting your range of motion back and getting your strength back after surgery.
Well, Doc, believe it or not, the phones are really ringing here. We've got three already. There are two left, and we're talking to Dr. Frederick Fletcher, and he is from Ortho New York, right? Is that what we
That's
call
right.
it? Ortho. Okay, and let us go to Peter in Stone Ridge. Okay, Peter, you're on.
Hi, I'm a 63-year-old man.
Hey, Peter, are you on? You need to be on the phone itself. Are you talking into the phone?
I am talking into the phone. Can you hear me now?
Yes, a bit of an echo, but go ahead, sure.
Okay, I'm a 63-year-old man, quite athletic, a cyclist. I've been a cyclist for about 25 years. 15 years ago, when I was a child, I had terrible knee troubles because I used non-safety bindings on skis when I was, you know, 7 or 8, and my knees would go out of joint regularly in my adolescent years. That kind of stabilized, and then about 15 years ago, my orthopedist, I had a significant amount on and off of knee pain. My orthopedist said, well, I was eventually going to need a knee replacement. It was close to bone on bone then, and that I should wait as long as humanly possible because of the improvements in technology. So my question is, at what point or with what symptoms do I really decide that it's time to bite the bullet and do it? Because obviously I want to wait as long as possible, also because of the longevity of the joint.
Well, the number one reason to have any total joint replacement is pain. So if your pain is mild, Peter, I wouldn't do anything yet, despite the fact that you've had arthritis for 15 years. There's no reason to go to surgery unless it really hurts. Now, you don't have to wait until you're coming in a wheelchair or can barely move. That used to be a recommendation, but nowadays we'd rather see the knee still move a little bit and still have some muscle strength and range of motion before surgery, because the best predictor of your range of motion and strength after surgery is what you come to surgery with in the first place. So don't wait until it's horrible, but certainly don't come in with mild pain for surgery. I think you'd be taking on the operation probably too soon.
So where does the arthritis typically, Doc, occur when you have to have a knee operation?
Well, really what arthritis means in most of our patients is a loss of cartilage. So the cartilage is the smooth white cushion between the bones and the knee. And when that wears away, there's nothing left except the bone, and the bone starts rubbing on bone, and it just hurts.
Well, I've always thought of arthritis as calcification. Is that wrong?
Well, you know what? A lot of people think that, and often when you look at an x-ray, you'll see some very large bone spurs that are growing around the knee. And so a lot of people think, well, that's the arthritis. Well, that's a sign of your arthritis. It's actually a way of Mother Nature making our knee stiffer by making these bone spurs. We don't bend it as much, and then it doesn't hurt as much. So the bone spurs or the calcifications aren't really what cause the pain. It's a loss of cartilage, really, that's the problem.
Now, are people who are overweight more likely to have knee operations?
Right. We see a lot of very heavy patients who are very arthritic, and it seems to be almost an epidemic these days of obese patients coming in with worn out knees and worn out hips.
But of course, we have an epidemic of obesity too.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Hey, Peter, anything else?
No, that's it. Thanks very much.
Hey,
I assume that I should just continue my athletic regimen because it builds muscle that protects the joint, correct?
I would. It's good to keep your muscles strong, keep your joint moving well, and as long as the pain isn't too bad, I'd keep doing what you're doing. It has many other benefits for your, you know, cardiovascular system. So I'd keep working out.
Thank you, Peter.
Right.
Appreciate
Thank
your
you.
Call.
Yep.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
The telephone number is 1-800-348-2551. We are here with Dr. Frederick Fletcher, and he's got the answers for your questions. Let's go to Kristen in Mount Marion. Okay, Kristen, you're on.
Hi. I developed a Quervain syndrome in both of my wrists after I had my first child.
Yes.
And I did go to an orthopedist who recommended that I have cortisone shots and surgery. But after that experience, having surgery on my jaw, I didn't want to have surgery. And I went to a chiropractor who really helped, and the pain went away.
Excellent.
But now I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. And I feel like my wrists have aged like 50 years since I've had kids. And I don't have the decurvings anymore, like, you know, the pain when I bend my wrist in that particular direction with the thumb and all that. But my wrists just hurt and they bother me. And I was wondering if you had a perspective on that and how I might be able to improve my, you know, my joint health and my wrists.
Absolutely, Kristen. You know, wrist pain can also be from arthritis, but often it could be from overuse activities, too. You're running around, I'm sure, as a very busy mother working with the kids and, you know, lifting and carrying things. And sometimes it could be a question of doing just a lot with your wrist and getting a strain or a sprain of the muscles and tendons around the wrist. You could have arthritis, and it may not be related at all to the decurvings that you had in the past. It sounds like you may have gotten over that. Have you tried anything like an anti-inflammatory, like ibuprofen or naproxen or any of those type of things?
I don't usually take, not steroidal pain reliever type
exactly.
thing. I have stung my wrist with nettles, which produces an acid that is, I know that there have been some studies that helps with joint inflammation, and that actually does provide kind of a heat relief.
I want to stop you there because I didn't get it, and I bet some of our listeners did get it. You have done what? I'm sorry?
Are you familiar with the plant stinging nettles?
No.
It's
no,
a weed.
No, we're not.
Yeah, it's a weed, and I've stung my wrist with stinging nettles. People also do sting therapy. It's a similar acid.
You said stung your wrist?
Yeah, you go sting your wrist with the stinging nettles. There are studies that show that it's effective, but it's temporary relief. I guess what I'm asking about is if you have recommendations on how to actually heal the joints instead of just managing the pain.
Right. Well, you know, it's always a little hard, of course, as you can imagine, to diagnose over
sure.
the radio. So
yeah.
My advice would be if this, if your remedy isn't helping, I'd probably at least make some contact with your family doctor or the orthopedic surgeon you talked to in the past. At least get it worked up and see if there might be something else that can be done. Sometimes even, you know, resting a little bit, icing, perhaps some of these nutritional supplements like glucosamine and chondroitin might help. It sounds like that might be a possibility, but certainly I'd run it by your doc.
Hey, Kristen, we got to let you go. We're up against a hard break here. We thank you so much for your good call. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Yeah, bye. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back seconds away.
Support comes from St. Francis Hospital and Health Centers Poughkeepsie, celebrating 100 years serving the healthcare needs of the community, including the Rettle Cancer Care Center, Emergency and Trauma Care, and Advanced Robotic Surgery, sfhospital.org. American Meditation Institute, Averill Park, New York, offering meditation classes for beginners working to reduce stress and enhance their health, americanmeditation.org. The Garrison in the Hudson Highlands, featuring an 18-hole golf course, restaurants and terrace dining, weddings, getaway packages, and Hudson River views, thegarrison.com. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Identity Eyewear, it's what sets you apart. EYEDENTITY Eyewear.net. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080.
And we are back thanks to our wonderful Zachary, who has brought us back to you via the magic of the control room. Okay, let's go to Steve in Westfield, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on.
Hello. I have developed a problem with my middle finger. When I make a fist, my middle finger doesn't want to straighten out. I've been told that this is, I haven't seen a doctor, I've been told this is called trigger finger. I'm wondering what the treatment is, or will it go away by itself? Or I've had it for about 7 months.
Okay, Steve. Yeah, the fancy name is stenosing tenosynovitis.
Whoa.
That's a lot easier to say trigger finger. What happens is the tendon that comes really from your forearm, it goes all the way up to your tip of your finger, actually runs through a system of little rings, not unlike a fishing pole has rings. It holds the line close to the fishing pole. And sometimes the tendon gets too thick for the ring, and then your tendon will get stuck on one side of the ring, and then you have to forcibly pull your finger up in order to straighten it out. And it often happens a little. Do you find it worse in the morning when you first wake up?
Well, no. What happened is last year I had carpal tunnel surgery in both hands.
Yeah.
And then I developed pillar pain in my right hand, and I went for therapy, and couple of the exercises where you clench your fist, and the other one is where you press your fingers against your palm, and that helped the pillar pain. But then back in January, I started getting this trigger finger developed. So I don't know if that's related to the carpal tunnel surgery.
Well, and again, I'm not sure if it's related to your carpal tunnel surgery, but the treatment for this generally is, again, rest, ice, and anti-inflammatory. Cortisone shots have some success. You can inject that area. It's usually around where your finger meets the palm of your hand, where it's triggering. That can be injected with a little bit of cortisone, and occasionally that'll make it go away. Now,
my problem is at the second joint from the tip of the finger, not at the palm.
Yeah, often it feels like it's there, but almost always it gets stuck a little bit further down. If you push around where that last crease is in your palm, just before your fingers, I bet you'll find a little nodule in there, and that's where usually the finger triggers. But in any event, if it doesn't go away with just an anti-inflammatory and taking it easy, I'd get in to see somebody for this. At least think about getting a shot. And even if it needed surgery, it's a little outpatient procedure done with a little bit of local anesthesia. And then we send you home. It's a fairly quick thing to recover from.
Okay, so it doesn't require going to a surgical center, you're saying?
Oh, yeah, well, you would, but as an outpatient. Or a hospital, any place that does
surgery.
All right,
I thought you meant by outpatient. I thought you meant in the doctor's office.
Hey, Steve, has anybody ever taken offense when that trigger finger, starts?
Well, it's the middle one, so it stays down. It doesn't come up by itself.
Yeah. The opposite thing.
It's the opposite.
Oh, I get it now. All okay, right. Steve, I couldn't help myself, and I apologize.
Thanks very much, Steve.
Appreciate it. Yep.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
1-800-348-2551. There's now just one free phone, and let's go to Margaret in East Chatham. Okay, Margaret, you're on.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Margaret.
Hi there. I hope you can help me. I'm a 69-year-old senior athlete. I was planning to leave tomorrow to run in the National Senior Games at the 1500 meter, where I'm ranked pretty high in the nation. And yesterday, about 30 hours ago, I twisted my ankle. I twisted my foot on just a light jog, and at the fifth metatarsal phalangeal joint. That's the little toe.
Yes.
Doctor.
Correct.
Okay, and it's quite swollen, black and blue already. I was able to see a physical therapist this morning. I couldn't get to. No orthopedists were available to see me for a couple of days. The physical therapist said, maybe you could just get a cortisone shot because he gave me some electrical stimulation and wrapped it. I've got to make a decision, and I'm not asking you because you haven't seen an X-ray or anything like that. I'm confident it's not broken because I'm able to walk around easily. I'm not jogging or anything like that, but just a simple walk with a good solid shoe like my running shoes doesn't seem to bother me, but I want to go into this competition.
Okay, so to put it down mildly, you want to go, and you're asking Dr. Fletcher whether or not, what his thoughts are on this.
Yeah, as far as if I can get some cortisone somewhere, whether it's an oral or a shot or something like that, should I try this, or is this such a risk that orthopedically it's going to risk be a problem for me five years down the road?
Okay, the question has been asked. Now we get the answer.
Sure. Any cortisone like this would have to be prescribed by a physician. There's no out over-the-counter cortisone that would help.
Yeah.
The thing is, I still don't think you've really got a diagnosis yet, Margaret. I know you feel as though it's not a fracture, although black and blue and pain along the lateral border of your foot, you know, that'd be the first thing I want to make sure you don't have. So I hate to put you in a big race with a fractured bone. So I know it's access is difficult. Not to pitch my group, but you know we have nowadays walk-in evening hours just for this sort of thing.
And where is it?
Ortho New York is our office on Everett Road in Albany, 121 Everett. So if somebody has a problem like this and they're in a hurry, especially you know a lot of kids will hurt themselves on the playground, we just tell them come on over and just walk in. You don't need an appointment. You don't even have to call.
And what are the hours?
We were running that 5 to 9 Monday through Friday.
Wow.
And it's called Ortho what?
New York.
Ortho New York.
Ortho New York.
So Margaret, when do you have to get on the plane?
Tomorrow at noon.
I would be waiting online at Ortho New York. And
that's what it sounds like I'm going to do. I'll head to Everett. All right. And I'll let you know if I do well. All right.
Thank you, Margaret.
Good luck, Margaret.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
That opens up one free line, 1-800-348-2551. One of our favorite correspondents, Jules from Hillsdale. Okay, Jules, you're on.
Yeah. Hi, Alan and the doctor. Two questions. One, I do a lot of crafts work. And frequently, either right or left hand, I'll be gripping something fairly tightly for, you know, several minutes at a time. I've noticed lately that whichever hand it is, and it can be either one, if it's more than 5 to 7 minutes, the thumb and forefinger tend to cramp up. I can feel it as a muscle cramp. It releases after a while, but it's a little annoying when it does that. I'm wondering... is there anything, you know, from vitamin supplement or whatever I could take to alleviate that?
Sure. You know, it sounds like you might be getting a little carpal tunnel syndrome from just the description. Usually the thumb and index finger are often involved in carpal tunnel, and it's sometimes associated with a cramping sensation or sometimes some numbness in your hand.
I haven't had a problem with numbness. It's just that the hand actually locks. I mean, those two fingers actually lock.
Now, wait. So the index finger, I'm sorry for asking a naive question, but if I've got it, others have it. Doctor, the index finger is the one next to the thumb?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
So that
gotcha.
And the thumb are actually locking. I mean, I can feel them, and it takes me maybe 30 seconds or so to release. Once they're released, I flex my hands a few times, and it's fine. But if I do that again for an extended period, then it tends to cramp up again. You know, it feels actually like a muscle cramp. No pain, essentially, but a muscle cramp, a sensation.
Yeah, especially the way it's somewhat activity-related. As you use your hand more, it gets this way. It could be arthritis, but I would just be worried that you might be getting some type of early stage of carpal tunnel syndrome. Again, it's I think that is a good reason to actually get in to see somebody, really, especially if you do a lot of work with your hands, because you won't be happy if this happens every time you pick up your tools and start to do any work.
So, Jules, is that your only question? Because
no, I have one more question.
Yeah, I thought you did.
And hopefully the other one is recovery rates for hip surgery or hip replacement versus knee. My brother, who's 70 years old, just had a full hip replacement on the right hip. And he was up and actually he was back to work within a week and a half. Basically, the only thing the doctor told me I had to be careful about is not bending over to touch his toes and keeping his knees about 12 inches for the next few months until the connective tissue builds up again. But his surgeon also told him that knee surgery replacement would have taken a lot longer recovery because the hip surgery these days is less invasive. I wonder if you could comment on that.
Absolutely. Of course, this depends on who you're going to for a doctor. Some doctors do pretty big incisions for hips. Others do small incisions. And I think there is a benefit to small surgery, at least in an early run, in that you do get better a little bit faster. Probably as time goes on over the course of the first year, it doesn't probably matter how big your incision was. Everybody ends up doing about the same. As far as which gets better faster, definitely hips are much easier to recover from. It's a simpler joint. It's a ball in a socket. I tell my patients you don't even really need to do much physical therapy for a hip, where a knee It's just the opposite. You do need to do a lot of physical therapy. There's a lot of bending, straightening. There's a lot of swelling associated with that particular operation. So there's a lot of there's a lot more recovery with a knee replacement. Significantly
more. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Thank you, Jules.
Okay.
Let's go to Ron in Albany. Ron in Albany, you're on.
Oh, good afternoon. This is real timely because actually I'm making an appointment with one of the doctors that's off in New York to have him take a look at my hip. I'm turning 60 years old in August. I've been always a very active competitive cyclist until I was 40 years old. About 5-6 years ago, I was out on a 10-mile run. And at the very end of the run, felt real sharp pain in my groin area. I figured it was a groin pull or something like that. Over the course of time, it gets better, but then it gets worse. Now I actually have hip pain. I have really kind of pulled back on the running, do a lot more running on a treadmill, Nordic track, that kind of thing. But I guess what I'm looking for is, what is the difference between total hip replacement versus hip resurfacing? Is there advantage, disadvantage between one and the other? Especially, I mean, I'm turning 60, but I feel like I'm 35 years old. So I would like to continue my cross-country skiing, downhill skiing, running. So that's really kind of the gist of my question.
Sure. They're both big operations, number one. A lot of people think if I'm getting a resurfacing, I'm getting a lesser procedure, and it really isn't. As a matter of fact, it's a bigger incision in most cases.
So what is resurfacing?
A resurfacing, Alan, is where we don't remove the femoral head. The ball is left intact.
Uh-huh.
We just shape the outside of the outer covering, if you will, of your native hip,
yep.
And then cap it with a new metal facsimile.
Mm-hmm.
About to say they come in different sizes, and then you also have a socket that goes in on the acetabulum, or the socket side of the hip has a metal surface.
And
put
the advantage of this is
it takes away less bone. So if you get a young patient, mm-hmm. and you're worried about, well, how long do we need a hip to last in this person if they're 40-50 years old, most hips will last 20 years by most studies anyway. And you might want to do something that is bone preserving for the younger patient. They both work, I think, equally as well, at least in my practice. I think my hip replacement patients and my hip resurfacing patients do pretty much everything. I don't really have a lot of restrictions. They both do everything they want to do. But in the younger patients, we will sometimes recommend a hip resurfacing. Now, there's some patients that are better for it than others. The best patient is a large male. Small females don't do as well with hip resurfacings. The metal, it is a metal-on-metal joint, which we talked about briefly before.
Yes, we did.
But it's a metal-on-metal joint that has not found to be a problem, except sometimes in the small sizes. So small females generally should not have a resurfacing, have a total hip replacement.
You said something, Doctor, that it really just piqued my imagination or inquisitiveness, and that was that the hip lasts for about 20 years. Which hip? Does all of our hips last only 20 years, or is it just the replacement hips you were talking about?
Replacement hips that we do.
Because otherwise,
we're all on overtime, yeah.
That's right.
go ahead, sorry.
So total hip replacement, you can still engage in downhill skiing or even impact kinds of sports like jogging?
I'll tell you, if you look at the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeon recommendations, they're not thrilled by the idea of people downhill skiing. Although I'll tell you from my own experience, people do downhill ski with total hips and for the most part do okay. It's not really a recommended activity. Jogging, the same. I have people that actually run triathlons with total hip replacements and do fine, although it's not a recommended procedure. Now, with Birmingham resurfacing is the name of the hip resurfacing procedure. Those are probably a little more durable in that it's a metal-on-metal joint, and there really are no restrictions that I'm aware of with a Birmingham hip resurfacing.
Hey, Ron, thank you for calling.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
1-800-348-2551, one free phone. I have to compliment you, Doctor. Every phone has been busy since you've gotten here. So a lot of people have these conditions. Let's go to Mark in Schenectady. All right, Mark in Schenectady, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Doctor. How are you this afternoon? My question is in relation to I just had a a major fall, and I was in recovery, went through OT and PT, and one of the things that happened in my fall was I broke my wrist, and I went through the casting process and then to the soft cast, and then I went through OT, and I'm done with my OT, but I'm still finding that my flexibility and my my ability to grab objects when I'm picking things up, I find that the strength is not there. I know that there's tendons and muscles around the wrist. My question is, when I go to a gym, any isolation type of exercises that you would recommend to help strengthen around the area that I broke, which was my wrist?
Right. The occupational therapist probably had you doing a lot of exercises, I would take it.
Yes, yeah. a lot of things with grips and just the movement, both up and down, side to side, and different flexibility exercises. But it was suggested that even when my doctor, that even though the wrist is healed, it's probably a tendon issue now.
Right, it's going to take a while probably for the scar tissue and things to go away. You know, it's a major injury. It just takes time. So I think with some time, you'll do fine.
Hey, Mark, we've got to let you go. We're up against the
break.
Thank you very much. Okay, so if your name is Lee or West or Frankie or Monica, stay right there. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Middletown Medical, with walk-in urgent care centers in Middletown and Ellenville for the treatment of injuries and illness. Minimal wait times, evening and weekend hours. MiddletownMedical.com for insurance providers. Anderson Center for Autism, Statsburg, New York, working to improve lives on the spectrum from 18 months to adulthood, diagnosis to graduation. AndersonCares.org. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. Express Pediatrics, Highland, New York. Walk-in urgent care for children, 7 miles from New Paltz. Open Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. to midnight. Weekends, noon to midnight. ExpressPediatrics.com. And The Garrison in the Hudson Highlands, featuring an 18-hole golf course, restaurants and terrace dining, weddings, getaway packages, and Hudson River views. TheGarrison.com.
And we are back. Thank you, Zachary. And let's go to Lee in Latham. Hello, Lee. How are you?
How often does Dr. Fletcher see sciatic nerve involvement from hip surgery or knee surgery as a complication?
Hopefully not very often, Lee. That is a problem. Anytime we operate near a joint, there's a lot of major nerves that are nearby, as I'm sure you are aware. In the hip, it's the sciatic nerve is sitting right behind the hip. And in a knee, of course, the tibial nerve is right there. The percentage of sciatic injury, it's pretty rare, I think, nationally. It's probably less than a half of 1%. I think in my practice, occasionally I'll see somebody who has a little bit of numbness or weakness, but usually it'll rectify. It's a pretty rare event. So to have the nerve go out completely and stay out is almost, I think, unheard of these days.
Lee, thank you so much for your call. We're trying to get everybody in. We appreciate it. Let's go to, I don't know who it is, somebody in West Albany. Okay, who's there?
Hello.
Hello, who are you?
Hi, this is Wes. Good afternoon, Doc.
Oh, Wes. Okay, great.
Hi. I do a lot of typing in my day job, and I'm also pretty active outside of work. I box sometimes, do some physical labor. As a relatively young and relatively active person, what kind of preventive maintenance can I do to ensure that I have healthy joints into my later years?
You know, that is somewhat of a difficult question to answer, only because every joint we have wears a little bit every day. Everything we do is making our knees and hips wear. So if you're an active guy, which I definitely encourage you to continue doing, I think that's wonderful, We do wear a little bit. The cartilage just, unfortunately, it's a matter of time. As far as what you can do, I think keeping your weight down and probably keeping your muscles strong around all the joints, especially your knees, is very helpful in keeping your cartilage protected in your knees. There's really been no proof that anything that you can take orally. I know a lot of patients will take this glucosamine and chondroitin I mentioned before. It's a nutritional supplement. There's very little hard data that's actually going to preserve your cartilage or anything. So there's probably not a lot of good, there's probably no good medical treatment for preserving cartilage. So I think just staying healthy, having a well-balanced diet, keeping your muscles strong, and trying to stay flexible. You know, I'm sure if you're working out, you know, things like yoga, stretching is probably good to keep these joints healthy.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Wes. Okay, and let's go to Frankie in New Paltz. Okay, Frankie.
Hey, Alan. Hey, Dr. Fletcher.
Hi.
Wanted to report positive news. You actually did a surgery on my wife about 11 years ago. Did her patella, her knee. And you kind of went on a diagonal with the surgery, or ACL, I should say.
I see, yes.
It was an ACL surgery, and it's been over 10 years, and she's an active woman still, very doing very well. So.
A satisfied customer.
Well, it's great to hear.
Just one other quick thing is that she does have, and we're just thinking about ankle now, she does have a little issue. I guess the doctor, the podiatrist said that her it's on her ankle that it never fused as a child. So she has this extra little bone that is dangling. So your practice, do you deal with feet as well? I wasn't sure.
Well, I'd, of course, be happy to see any of my patients again. And please say hi to her for me.
All right.
But, yes, and we do have, if I felt it was necessary, we do have some foot and ankle experts we could always refer her on to if it was something that was in need of a specialist in that field.
Frankie, thank you.
All right, her knee is great, so thank you again.
Okay, thank you, Frankie.
All right,
so now for the first time we have actually two free phones, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Monica in Schenectady. Monica.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Doctor. How are you?
I'm great.
Thank you. I listened to the show, and this is the first time I'm calling, but it piqued my interest because I am 24 weeks pregnant, and I am having a very difficult time just getting around, and I know the joints, when you're pregnant, loosen up, and all sorts of wacky things are happening, but at the same time, I don't necessarily hear any of my doctors really talk about it. They just say, yeah, that's normal, but I'm having a very hard time, again, getting around, and I feel like my hips are sort of like going to fall off my body. I actually went to a doctor last week, but an orthopedic doctor, and he just sort of looked at me kind of like I was crazy when I talked to him about my situation. So I wondered if you could touch upon pregnancy and how your joints, what happens to your joints, but aside from just, I guess, putting up with it, what else can be done? Because it's actually quite scary.
Okay, Monica, question asked. Let's get an answer.
Monica, congratulations. I think there's a couple issues. One, when you see a physician when you're pregnant, we always feel a little frustrated because we can't do a lot. We can't check an X-ray. And we can't put you on really any medications that your obstetrician hasn't approved, and usually that's only Tylenol. So there's not a lot that we can generally do. I think, always check with your obstetrician about anything you try to take for your when you're pregnant, of course. But I think the probably the best thing you can do, of course, is always be mindful of your weight gain. Sometimes gaining too much weight will put a lot of stress on your hips and your low back. And I've seen some patients even get some neurologic symptoms like sciatica because they've gained an awful lot of weight. And it throws your balance off. You're carrying a lot of weight in front of you that you're not accustomed to. So if you can keep your total weight gain down to whatever your obstetrician recommends, I think that would probably be one of the best things you can do. And I wouldn't give up trying to, you know, stay somewhat active, get out and walk. Most obstetricians, I believe, don't have any problem with walking, and even if you were doing some exercise, to continue doing it. Most people aren't told to stop in pregnancy unless they're doing something very strenuous. So always check with your obstetrician. But I think getting out and walking and trying to watch your weight gain are probably the two best things you can do to keep these hips from hurting.
Yeah, and I have to say I consider myself to be very healthy. I'm a vegetarian, so I don't eat any junk food, let's say. And but that's the thing. I'm used to working out, doing yoga, but I find that it's very challenging for me right now to even go for a short walk or do yoga. And it's kind of interesting that aside from just drugs and having to do x-rays, I don't really hear much talk about how to really help the pregnant women, cope with that. It's just interesting.
Yeah, Monica, I have you talked to your obstetrician about this? Because,
yes.
And did they have any advice? Because I don't think it's that much of a usually that big of a problem not being able to walk or do much after when you're pregnant. So I would at least make sure they are understand your concern. But I would encourage you to try your best. I don't know whether you could get to work with a trainer or somebody if you have access to a trainer or somebody that could help you do some safe exercising. I'd be all for that.
Hey, Monica, thanks for the call.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a good afternoon.
You're welcome. Let's go to Paul in Western Massachusetts. Okay, Paul, you're on.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I just had a carpal tunnel surgery on my hand at the end of February, and the surgery was great. You know, I was able to sleep the next night. I started working the next week. I work as a waiter. I carry a lot of heavy plates and everything. I'm using the hands a lot. Just this past week or so, I've been experiencing a lot of pain to the right of the surgery scar on my hand, on my right hand, and my hands are weaker. I'm having trouble gripping things, and it's really bothersome. And I'm wondering, is it the weather? Could it be that? Is it, or is it something I should think about going to the orthopedic surgeon and having them check out?
Yeah, I think, Paul, you should consider getting back into seeing your orthopedic surgeon. Sometimes carpal tunnel syndrome can recur. And if by any chance some scar tissue has filled in and now is restricting that nerve function again, maybe he could help you with that. Now, it does take a while to get over carpal tunnel surgery. It's not usually just a quick procedure because the damage to the nerve has been going on for years. So sometimes it takes a while to get things working again. But
are you suggesting sometimes you can go get back to too much exercise too early?
Well, you might, and especially doing the kind of work that Paul's doing, lifting heavy trays and things. I couldn't imagine anything else that put much more strain on a wrist than that. So,
did your doctor tell you to take it easy, Paul?
Well, yeah, he told me to take it easy, but unfortunately, I'm a waiter.
Right, you gotta.
You know, if I don't work, I don't get paid.
Exactly.
So it's I was forced to. I tried to be as careful as possible, and I really felt like I was making a lot of progress as far as the healing process. And now suddenly, it's really sensitive. I can't put any weight on my hand. I can't, it's really quite painful.
I'd get in to see him, Paul. I think that's a real good reason to get in to see your doctor. Absolutely.
Hey, Paul, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Mark in Schenectady. Okay, Mark, you're on.
Hi, thank you, Alan, and
sure.
Thank you, Dr. Fletcher, for taking the call. Back in 2011, I was diagnosed with an S1 bulging disc, and since then, the physiatrist that ordered the MRI that showed this has sent me to, pain management doctors who have done injections with, I guess there's some sort of steroid or painkiller like Lyrisol, but they've been doing them at the beginning at L3 and L4. Lately, back in May was the last one done through bilaterally through L2 through 5, and they've had very no effect at all, I can't even say little effect. I have had two what were called radio frequency ablations, and it was only the second one where I felt a little bit of relief for about a day, and then the pain came back through my back, up into my shoulders, and actually down into my hands, makes them numb. My question is, do you think this is a, they've scheduled me for another series of injections through L2 through L5 bilaterally. Do you think this is an effective course of action?
It sounds like your symptoms are don't really equal where your disc problem is to me. Usually a lower lumbar disc is going to affect your legs, and you're having problem in your arms and your hands.
Well, so, I'm a C6 quadriplegic, so I'm paralyzed from the chest down. But
okay.
Up until 2011, when the S1 disc problem was diagnosed, I was very active, but it slowed me down quite a bit.
Yeah, I think this is probably something to go back, not to your pain management doctor, but probably back to your surgeon. And I think these injections can be helpful, but if you've done it a few times and you're not getting any benefit from it anymore, I wouldn't keep doing it. And so I think you'd probably have to move on to something else. It sounds like you've done all the many of the non-operative things between this radio frequency ablation as well as the injections. So I'm not sure if that's being effective with you, Mark. So I would probably get in to see your surgeon, neurosurgeon or orthopedic surgeon.
So I'm going to ask you a question there, Doc. You know, it seems almost de rigueur now that when you go to the surgeon says, okay, go try the injections first. We see that a lot now. And I keep hearing from people, I had them too, that the first time it seems okay, the second time a little less, and the third time they don't quite work the way they were supposed to. Am I just imagining that?
No, I think that is a common presentation. Other people actually are maintained with injections. So, but we do see some that just aren't helped. And I think to continue getting an injection, even though it's easy, if it's not working, there's no reason to do it.
Mark, we really are up against it. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to Lorraine in Schenectady. Okay, Lorraine, you're on.
Hello.
Hey, Lorraine, you got to go fast.
No, it's Marie.
Oh, Marie, I'm
Marie,
so
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. My husband fell off a ladder. Yes. He didn't break his arm. He broke his wrist, and the bone didn't quite come together. He had several x-rays. Because of the pain and having being told by one orthopedic surgeon, possibly your group, I'm not sure, but anyway, to insert a plate so that he would have movement, dexterity, flexibility in his hand. He's able to use the arm, but what, Dr. Fletcher, what is the outcome? Does he have time to change his mind and have it done? What he was told, a lot of pain, and when was mentioned oxycodone, I said, no way, he is one that cannot stand a lot of pain, and I thought, no, that's addictive. I know about that from friends who have had back surgery. But anyway, I think the question is, if he doesn't want to have the plate insert, what happens? Declining nature of the movement in the hands?
Hey, Marie, we only have a second here because we have to be out soon. Go ahead, Doc.
Well, the bone's going to heal probably whether he has surgery or not, but the idea of the plate is you can set the bone the exact position that it should be in, which will give his hand better function. So nowadays, that's considered to be more of a state-of-the-art treatment for most of these fractures.
Thank you very, very much.
Okay, thank you, Marie.
Thanks, Alan.
Okay, yeah,
bye.
You're welcome. I'm so sorry, everybody. We're out of time, and Tony from Selkirk, and Jim from Granby, Connecticut, and Joan from Delaware County. Next time, we do appreciate your calling, but, you know, it's a reality. We're out of time. A big thank you to Dr. Frederick Fletcher for joining us today. The hospital's support for Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout Hudson Valley, 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell, who was terrific. Boy, was she working hard today. Our producer is Ian Pickus. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update. And again, Dr. Fletcher, I want to thank you for taking all this time and being with us.
Thank you, Alan.
Okay, take it away, Zach.